Today's scripture reading is from the book of John in the New Testament, chapter 11, verses 17 through 29 and 32 through 35. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she replied. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. This is the word of the Lord.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining today, and happy Mother's Day. Each Sunday right now, we're looking at different biblical figures in our ongoing series, Faces of Affliction, Heralds of Hope, exploring how each one dealt with their difficulties and through it became beacons of hope for us. And today we look at one of the more moving stories in all the New Testament. Several figures highlighted, two sisters dealing with the loss of their brother, interacting with Jesus, and then these multiple figures highlighting for us the multidimensional nature of affliction, and at each point, something that we need, something about loss, something about love, and something about life. First of all, something about loss. 4 days after Martha and Mary lost their brother, Lazarus, Jesus shows up. Martha runs out to him and says, "If you had been here, my brother would not have died." Now, she hadn't lost her belief, but she's struggling to make sense of it in light of her loss. Makes sense. They had sent word to Jesus that Lazarus was ill, but it seemed like he was taking his time getting there. Imagine them thinking, "Jesus, what's up? I thought we were really good friends of yours. You've healed a lot of people. What's happened here? Jesus, you've walked on water. You've fed thousands of people from a few loaves and fish. Jesus, you could blink and get here in an instant. You could heal from a distance. What's going on?" And then Mary, when she hears Jesus is there, she just runs out to him and breaks down. She fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Same words, did you notice, but very different expression of grief. Less analytical, more raw emotion. And this shows us something about loss. What you and I need when we're going through loss is not to have to manufacture some formulaic set of emotions that other people expect, but to be ourselves, to be real and authentic, to be raw, especially as we're going through this season. There was an interesting piece this week in The New Yorker written by Lauren Collins titled "Reinventing Grief in an Era of Enforced Isolation." She writes, "Some of the free-floating grief that the coronavirus has unleashed among the otherwise rich, safe, and secure is actually grievance." Reinventing grief. Ah, yes, because none of us have been through this before. This free-floating grief seems to hit us We don't really know where it's come from, what's going to happen to it. The coronavirus is not affecting us in the same ways. Very different kinds of loss. Today is graduating Sunday at City Church. We're celebrating those of you who are graduating from high school. Congratulations. But boy, I really feel for you because certainly this isn't how you anticipated the last months of high school to be. And I actually talked to someone this week who'd finished all their education, different kind of loss. They had secured a position and then got a phone call before they ever started work from their employer saying, you know, because of the economic impact of COVID-19, we're now not able to offer you a position. Wide-ranging loss all over the place. Unemployment, underemployment, massive hit economically. Many people, of course, physically ill. What are we to make of all this? And then there's also plenty of loss that is unrelated to COVID-19. I mean, the horrific video circulating this week of the vicious killing of Ahmaud Arbery and all the loss that's associated with that. In my own experience, we had a good friend who lost their father this week, unrelated to COVID-19. Another friend that lost a very close relative. Very difficult time. Free-floating grief. What are we to make of all of it? Vincent van Gogh, right before he died, one of the last paintings that he ever painted was a painting of Lazarus. And many scholars have observed that Lazarus in the painting has a ginger beard just like Van Gogh did. It's as though Van Gogh is inviting us to see him in Lazarus, the suffering, the agony, the loss. And I think, by extension, it's an invitation for you and me to see ourselves in him as well, to see ourselves in each of these faces of affliction, in Mary and Martha, to find ourselves in them so that we can better find ourselves emotionally in our loss. That's something about loss. Now something about love. While we all need the freedom to express ourselves honestly as we go through affliction, it's also important to know that God cares. That is, if our faith is to have any meaningful part of processing our suffering. Yes, it's critical to know that God is in control, but if you have God's control without his compassion, God ends up feeling really cold, distant, non-empathetic. But of course, this story shows us couldn't be further from the truth. When Mary and Martha first sent word to Jesus about Lazarus being ill, they say this, "Lord, the one you love is sick." I mean, it's apparent that what first came to their mind when they thought about the relationship Jesus had with Lazarus was that Jesus, of course, loved him. And then we're told how Jesus felt toward all three of them. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And then when Jesus saw Mary and others around them grieving, it says that he was deeply moved to tears. And this, you know, isn't the single silent kind rolling down the cheek. It says in John 11:35, in the shortest verse in the English translation of the Bible, Jesus wept. See, don't you understand? This was an emotional outburst from the Lord. That those witnessing this, standing around, said, "See how he loved them." John 11:36. Mary and Martha came honestly to Jesus with their questions. Jesus came to them with his tears. You see, he's not an ivory tower God, not some impersonal spiritual force that you tap into. He is a friend who loves us deeply and weeps with us. And this is so vital to lay hold of, because oftentimes it's not gonna make sense what is going on with your faith in the light of your suffering. You know what Jesus' response was when he was first told about Lazarus' suffering? It says that he stayed there, this is John 11:6, where he was for 2 more days. And we're told this right after we learn that Jesus really loved them. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, Real love, right, Jesus, would immediately drop everything and go to him, but that's not what Jesus did. How do you make sense of this? The fact that he was not rushing to them merely meant that he had something else in his plan that Mary and Martha were not informed about. It didn't mean, of course, that he was uninterested in caring for them, but that actually that he truly loved them. It just not in a way that readily made sense to them. Shakespeare said, "The course of true love never did run smooth." And from our perspective, at times, the course of the true love of God doesn't take the path that we anticipate. But that doesn't mean that he's disinterested. He's never too late. He never shows up with too little. He is always there right at the exact time that he needs to be there. And he is deeply moved. He loves us and he weeps with us. That's something about loss and love. Now, something finally about life, because the final thing we need when we're suffering is to know that there's going to be relief, that this isn't going to go on forever, that there's actually hope beyond the crisis that we're going through. It's one of the things that makes this such a difficult time. Dr. Ben Weinstein, the chair of psychiatry at Houston Methodist, said we handle things much better when we know that there's an expectation of relief. And right now, we don't know. No one knows. Martha, as she was processing all of her questions, Jesus came to her with a statement of metaphysical relief. He said, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die." Now, when he said, "I am the resurrection and life," "I am" is code in Hebrew for "I'm God." It's a claim to divinity. And of course, the religious leaders knew this. That's why they considered it blasphemy. It was one of the principal arguments in their trial against him. Jesus saying, "I am the resurrection and life," it wasn't some sentimental gesture. It was a radical, audacious statement of fact that he backed up first by raising Lazarus from the dead, which was a prelude, secondly, to raising himself from the dead. When Jesus approached Lazarus's tomb, it says that he was deeply moved. The English translation there is actually a bit muted. In the Greek, the expression is more that he roared or snorted with anger like an animal, like a lion, like a bull. The Message dynamic translation captures it well. Then Jesus, the anger welling up within him, arrived at the tomb. He was furious, a sort of primordial rage. What was going on? What was he so angry about? The 16th century theologian John Calvin said that it was anger at a readiness to do combat with our greatest enemy, death. By saying that he was the resurrection and the life, Jesus was saying, "I have authority, I have power over this, and I'm going to back it up by overcoming your greatest enemy and obstacle, death." And therefore, every approximation of death in this life, I will deal with it in that one moment of overcoming the grave. It's as though Jesus, when he was standing before Lazarus's tomb, was saying, "Okay, Lazarus, if I'm going to bring you out, I've got to bury myself. If I'm going to interrupt your funeral, I've got to cause my own funeral. That if I'm going to spring you out of death, I've got to sign my own death warrant." Our response to this, I think we should look to Mary. Mary, it said, when she first heard Jesus was there, she got up quickly, went to him, and fell at his feet. It's a striking thing about Mary. She's always at Jesus' feet, seems like. She's at Jesus' feet as he's teaching her, so she can learn from him. In another episode, she's at his feet anointing him compassionately. And now she's falling at his feet, weeping. There is no more safe, comforting place in all the universe to be as we're grappling with the free-floating grief that is so indicative of this life. But because Jesus reversed death through his overcoming death in his resurrection, we know there's relief. We know that this life is just the beginning. I so love the way that C.S. Lewis concluded his Chronicles of Narnia series. After all the wonderful ups and downs that the children had been through, all of their adventures, he said, "The things that began to happen after that were so great and beautiful that I cannot write them. And for us, this is the end of all the stories. And we can most truly say that they all lived happily ever after. But for them, it was only the beginning of the real story. All their life in this world and all their adventures in Narnia had only been the cover and the title page. Now at last, they were beginning chapter one of the great story, which no one on earth has read, which goes on forever, in which every chapter is better than the one before." As you confront the free-floating grief of this tough time, do so by coming just as you are, falling at the feet of the one who loves you, who weeps with you, and who overcame death for you. And one day, love will transport you to a place where your weeping will be transformed into wonder as this chapter closes and the great story begins.